Optimus Tarjo. No JT.
What's up to all the villains out there in the Geek Nation? That's right, because I'm saying fuck you, sidekicks and henchmen. Optimus Douche is in charge of this week's podcast. Yes, you get to listen to me ramble to myself for the next 20 minutes, so you can feel exactly like my coworkers, my parents, and my wife. Only one of which has yet to abandon me. So please keep the chain going and stay with statistical odds and don't fucking listen to another second of this. You might be asking yourself, where are my co-hosts this weekend? Have they too abandoned any prospect of ever recording with me again? And you know what? I don't know. They seem to be very enamored with their kumquat horrific cast that they're doing now. Every Thursday, where they talk about horror movies. Because that's supposedly interesting, so it's, I think, more interesting than this. Thus, I am sorry, dear listeners, you are stuck with me talking about this week's books, as well as answering one tweet, because that's what we've gotten thus far for hashtag AskTard, or at PopTardsGo, or at Rob Patey. One tweet. Again, I would read emails, but no one has emailed me, and I am the only one of us that really knows how to use Twitter. So thus, I will now read the one tweet we received from Dan Day, who's apparently our only listener who's capable of delivering a message in 140 characters. Actually, you should just use 120 for maximum retweetability. For exponential share, just a little marketing lesson, which I can drop all fucking night because it's my podcast. All right, so Dan Day replies to our homework question last week where we asked you all, what other shit do you collect other than comic books? So Dan writes, things I collect other than comics, hot toys. I don't have any fucking clue what you mean. I'm assuming maybe you like to melt toys. You were one of those creepy pyromaniac kids. Masterpiece Transformers, which just sounds like how douchey kids refer to their Transformers. What the fuck makes it a masterpiece? Is it, wait, the Mona Lisa Prime, where Mona Lisa transforms into a friggin' death cart that carries around black plague bodies? Masterpiece again. All right, Marvel Legends. That's a thing. DC Direct figures. That's another thing. And the lovely woman in your photo with you, Dan Day, on Twitter, she has my deepest sympathies. Finally, Magic cards. Okay, this I respect because I do something similar. I play a game called Dominion, which is a deck-building game. The difference being, though, Dominion doesn't completely rape your wallet for all time. Dominion just rapes your wallet each time you buy one expansion pack. There's only eight of them, so really less wallet rapey than Magic cards or comic books. So thanks, Dan. We really appreciate you sending that out there. The guys wrote me in and they told me what they collect. JD says, "Hey, Optimus. I really like to collect soiled underwear where the labels, sizes shown by a cartoon animal." And thank you, JD. We appreciate that. Mark Miller writes in saying, "I just like to collect sorrow." So thanks, guys. Appreciate that. Again, I collect comic books and basically the souls of the week. And speaking of sucking the soul out of you, let's get into our first book this week, Dark Gods by Justin Jordan and art by German Era Mouse P. German Era Mouse P. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly, or if I am, that's the best fucking name ever. And will you marry me, German? put out by Avatar Press, I don't know. I really believe Avatar is one of those signs that an artist has arrived. They seem to revere the people that are making a name or have made a name and resonated a deep voice within the comic industry. So it's nice to see Justin Jordan, who's done some really great stuff on things such as Luther Strode for Image, and really some good work on Shadow Man over in Valiant, even though, you know, we didn't see Shadow Man rise to the same success as other titles. I believe that's more of a misplaced cadence within the universe than anything that was on Justin's shoulders. So now here he is with Dark Gods, and according to our interview we did with Justin a couple weeks ago, this is Justin's take on centrally the entropy of the universe, the Chitahulu, the tentacle thing made by Lovecraft with all the fucking consonants, were essentially manifested by us, wherein we believed in these antimatter from before the darkness Big Bang creatures, and they existed then, but they were cast away by the light. But because we actually were allowed our fragile psyches to be afraid of them, we pretty much brought them back into the consciousness, and now they're really pissed off and taking over corporate America. See, that's right. As we all expected, apparently the one percenters really are the embodiment of all pure evil and absence of light, joy, hope, or imagination in the universe. The central protagonist in this is just middle management guy named Josh, who stays after work thinking he's going to get a blowjob from his secretary. At least that's how I read it. That wasn't implicitly stated. I think that was a subtext. And when he does, he is essentially taken to the executive washroom, which is essentially the Chikatohulu chamber. It's a rarely good book. I like the way that Jordan postulates that there was something before the Big Bang. This entropy in the universe had a form unto itself, and it was a dark form that we'll never understand. It's the opposite of everything we believe that is expansion and growing and moving forward into this sort of just collapse of all existence. I also really believe that Mousepiss just did a great job with the art on this. There are some parts where it feels a little static, in that the panels just don't move as fluidly as they could. It's most apparent, really, in the modern-day scenes with Josh and the coworker before the whole, you know, setup is revealed. In the history tour, though, it's kind of a nice, I don't know, impressionistic version of the subtext, or the exposition that led up to why these Dark Arts are coming back, and this sort of skewed take on where the universe was formed and what was before the formation of this known iteration of the universe. So very heady concepts, really new stuff for Jordan. Jordan really hasn't scratched this far into the esoteric surface, at least not for the main theme of any of his books. So it's interesting to see how it's going to carry forward, and it's interesting to see how far it will carry forward in the Avatar model. As of late, we've really just been seeing a lot of one-and-done miniseries from these guys, like Super Gods a couple years ago. That was the last one I think I really remember that just stuck with me and I really enjoyed. I think this is the next one, we'll say. So check it out, Dark Gods by Pop-Tart friend Justin Jordan. Now let's jump from Avatar to a house that produces a lot of new books and a lot of new series, some of which have gone past Volume 1. We'll see about the recent crop of 2014, but I'm talking about Image, and I'm talking about the book Southern Bastards by Jason Aaron. We reviewed the first run of these, the first three of these, I believe, a couple weeks ago, maybe the first two. Now we're back to look at, back to look at issues 3, 4, and 5 by myself, because again, no one likes me and these fuckers just want to talk about horror now. But anyway, Southern Bastards. I was a little on the fence about this book in the beginning. It's a story of a guy, it's sort of a homecoming story of Middletown, America, which I really loathe and despise. I hate the towns where basically people's lives are so depressed and uninteresting that they've got to focus on everybody else's fucking life. And really focus on the mundane details that keep human existence simply mired in this, still this primordial genetic ooze in which we've seemed content to wallow in. It's really disgusting, and I really find it prevalent. The less diversions there are from a cultural perspective within American towns. I've lived in the big city, I've lived in small town America. Really, this asinine obsession with being king of a very small hill is prevalent most likely in places where high school is seen as, high school graduation is seen as an accomplishment. So anyway, Southern Bastards, this guy comes back, it's his father was this prick judge, but he kept justice in the town. Dude comes back to settle up his father's estate. There's a coach boss who's a sports balls coach of the footballs variety. And like all small towns, pretty much this moronic fucking game determines social status and prominence and many other things until these young men graduate high school, can't read, can't get a job hitting things, and essentially become alcoholics and die. But not this guy. This guy didn't do that. He escaped, but now he's back to go after those people who were essentially just not worthy of ever leaving the small town, and to go up against his coach, who's kind of like a Don Corleone of the South. It sounds like I don't like this series. I do. It's a very good story. It's a very good examination for all those city folk who are never exposed to this horrific mindset of being, and it's got sort of a supernatural element to it with this stick, very much like Wonder Boy from The Natural, the movie where Robert Redford got his baseball bat from lightning that hits a tree. That's what this beat stick is, the beat stick that the returning prodigal son uses, and now the beat stick that is belonging to Coach Boss, the football coach mafioso guy, when he essentially puts the beat down on our protagonist that we've known for the past five issues. Dude just gets fucking bludgeoned to death and he's gone. That's pretty much issue five. I really don't know where this series is going. This is confusing the living shit out of me. I really thought this was going to be like a Clint Eastwood sort of intellectual property that could be sold off for, you know, a movie by Miramax in 2 years. And now the lead character's dead, which is very odd. Unless he's not dead, which wouldn't be odd, and that would be comics. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Bastards. Give this a try. It's pretty good. It's a very human story, obviously, and I find it bothersome merely because of my prejudices against any town that's really not along a seaboard. But you don't have those same prejudices, so you should give this a try. I think if you like Jason Aaron's Scalped, this is along those lines again. This is him kind of trying to get back into the indie scene with a part of, you know, really culture that's out there, but everybody ignores. Southern Bastards, get up on it. If you like that sort of thing and aren't really bothered by it. For the next review, we're going to go talk about another Image book. This is Rasputin, which is essentially the book I never asked or wanted to read, but I'm really glad I did. For anybody who doesn't know, Rasputin was essentially a guy who whispered bad advice into the ear of a Tsar, as it's said in its native tongue, Tisser, or bad consonant king, as we say in English. So Rasputin whispered something in his ear, and, you know, the guy went and killed the whole family, and then basically, I think it was DreamWorks, made a cartoon about the daughter that the Tsar threw in a ditch. That's what I understand about Rasputin and what I remember from my grandmother telling me of our Russian-Ukrainian heritage It was Rasputin and some shit about our people painted eggs. I don't know. I still got the eggs. I don't remember the crap about Rasputin. I apologize. But anyway, this story of Rasputin, which is based on true-ish events by Alex Grecian with art by Riley Rosmo, is about a Rasputin that is essentially plagued by the ghost of his past, and the story opens up with essentially an evening at dinner, and there's four people with Rasputin, and he's wondering which one of them is going to kill him this evening. And one of the, you know, is it the wine on the table? Will it be a shiv to the back? Will it be the tenets of communism, essentially, that kill Rasputin's soul just as it crushed his country's soul? We don't know. But what we do know is we actually get to do a little flashback. We spend a few minutes at the table in the present now. Then we do a flashback to the father of Rasputin, who's a right old bastard and tussled with a bear, killed the bear, and almost died himself, was very close to living, until Rasputin basically, I think, crushed in his skull. So this is not a nice man. We know that from history. We also are learning a little bit about this from this book. Not to say that his father was a nice man, so then you get into the whole thing about, should you forgive and forget if you follow the Christian tenets, or should you just shiv the bastard if you're human? And that's a tough conundrum, and Rasputin definitely tackles that. The art is exquisite, and I have a but, I don't have an and, I don't have a caveat. This is just absolutely beautiful. Riley really revels in a level of detail, not just in the big splash pages, but within even the finite panels, where I really felt like I was in old-timey Russia, of a man who's very powerful and can keep other people as slaves to polish his opulent things. Rasputin's a prick. Rasputin has a lot of pricks currently in his life, and Rasputin has a lot of ghost pricks that he needs to bust with an ectoplasm trap. And I really can't wait to see it. Again, I just did nothing twice about giving two shits about this book. It was on the shelf. I looked at it, and I'm like, I really don't want to relive history lessons with my grandmother, and this thing doesn't come in a bag, nor with a painted egg. It's not a scratch and sniff that smells like a painted egg, so I really doubted its Russian authenticity. No more. This is 100% 99 Loaf Balloons. I love Rasputin, and you should too, or you are stupid and are doomed to repeat history and elect Rasputin in 2016. Next up, we're going to jump away from the indie scene and move over to DC Comics, the venerable institution that is right now literally running a series, two series, three series, that are devouring themselves like an Ouroboros. That's absolutely confirmed, folks. I tweeted it out there to Dan Didio, Jim Lee, and Jeff Johns, and Dan wrote me back and said, yeah, pretty much everything, Multiversity, everything Future's End, everything Earth 2 is all going to combine into one big thing called, as we now know from DC's press release today, Convergence, which will debut in April, or explode on the scene in April, because I think we're going to do a Big Bang implosion where it nom 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 noms itself in and then just bleh, throws it all up. But before we get to that, we've got Deathstroke number one. And this is with art and writing by Tony Daniel. And I think that Deathstroke number one was just a great book in 1990. I love the old Deathstroke. I love his connections with the old Teen Titans. It was all just a wonderful synergistic time. And he was just a right old bastard to contrast most of the superhero universe that had yet to fallen into the cadence of the Dark Age of comics, which we ostensibly think ran from like 1986 to 2000. Deathstroke was a definitive anti-hero, a guy that could kill anybody, even though he only really had one good eye, which you think would just totally fuck his depth perception. But apparently, with one eye in his superhero canon, he can see in three dimensions. I don't know. That was, again, Deathstroke number one in the 90s, which was, really before America's hopes were completely crushed. And I think this new Deathstroke is a minor reflection of that just overall American sadness we have these days. Tony Daniel did a great job writing this thing. Tony Daniel did an admirable job, more than admirable job, penciling this. This is stupid from a direction standpoint. Once again, we've got another number one, we've got another reset, we've got another introduction, outside of any larger contrast or actual catalyst or need for it. I'm going to go over Future's End here in a minute, which, again, it's a series that's driving the universe somewhere. And that's, I think, something that we are all missing or we all want to see again, where your Superman and your Batman series, even the one-off, fucking mattered. These days, we're throwing these characters against the wall simply to throw characters against the wall. And I kind of ask myself the same question about Deathstroke that I find myself asking about many of the old 1980s characters that have been resurrected again in the New 52, like Booster Gold. Like, these ancillary spinoffs over time that resulted from the Holy Trinity, resulted from the JSA, that were definitive contrivances of the time, very good for when they came out, but they still resonate. I read the solo adventure, and it feels very much like I'm reading Grayson number one again, where this is sort of a mercenary, sort of a cool, killer type of guy, a little more callous than Dick Grayson, obviously, since Dick is just getting the beginning of this whole international super spy thing, and Deathstroke's been doing it forever. But it just doesn't seem to require its own adventure. Now, I look at the Deathstroke I'm seeing in Future's End, which is probably a nice segue into our final comic of the evening, and he's pretty cool there. He's an interesting father figure character who's, in the 5 years in the future has sort of become kind of this mentor in Cadmus Island with, the psychopathic 50 Sue and managing Brother Eye. Deathstroke in this regard is one of the many, it's five vignettes that are going on right now within the whole Future's End storyline. He's pretty cool there. Not so much necessary in the here and now, not as interesting in the here and now, damn pretty in the here and now. I mean, Tony just really drew the hell out of this book. He is a great artist. Again, I just didn't really, the storyline left me wanting for more. And also very exposition-heavy, explaining the inner workings of Slade Wilson. I appreciate exactly how it was written, but again, I can't get past necessity. And there just doesn't seem to be any. But again, I'll tell you where Slade is necessary, and that's the New 52, Future's End. And you know what, kids? Because there's a bowl of shit can the other two tonight, you're getting a sneak preview of issue number 27. So decide carefully what you like to see in the future. More JD and Mark coming back, or advanced reviews of comics that are not in your hands yet. You go ahead. You figure it out. Really, this is going to be sort of, though, the I imagine spoilers were, let's say, the five senses. This is going to be the Helen Keller spoilers, basically. It's kind of cool, but not all there. Essentially, this is the issue where Terry McGinnis finally converges with Batman, and we also see a little bit more of the horrors that essentially have been perpetrated against all the heroes in the future as we start spending more and more time with Mr. Terrific as he laments the landscape and its hellishness, while Brother Eye just taunts him like some kind of a dick for some reason. I don't know why he does it. He just does. And that really goes for all robot sidekicks in New 52. Skeets is kind of a haughty son of a bitch as well. Alright, so like I said, not a lot happened this issue. And I think it's a testament to the tempo of this weekly cadence. Things happen, but They're not overwhelming. They're not tied to an event. They're just trying to tell a freaking story without worrying about all the other places you've got to go to learn more about this story. So yes, Huntress Girl. I don't know who the hell that is. Horrible character. Power Girl and Huntress, World's Finest. Earth 2. And these books are all creating a much larger landscape for DC. And I think that's the most interesting thing to watch right now. As, you know, you go through these vignettes to see all the second string characters basically killed off, it's cathartic. I mean, I was so pissed at what happened to Stormwatch and just how poorly it was handled. I'm just happy to see them all dead. As much as I hate to see Frankenstein and, Amethyst from Sword and Sorcery go, I'm going to sacrifice with them since they don't have their own individual books anymore. And as much as I enjoy them, I was the only person who did enjoy them, so they no longer exist. The other vignettes, they bother me a little bit in their own ways. The Tim Drake one where he's hiding and he's a bartender named Cal. His girlfriend with the daddy issues is a little too much. My father lied to me, so thus nobody can ever be trusted again. Ever. It's a little preachy, it's a little much, it's a little too heavy for, I think, for a comic book that's trying to create a new brand picture for the universe. Who gives a shit about Tim Drake's girlfriend's whining when she finds out he's not just a bartender, but he was Tim fucking Drake of the Teen Titans. So that vignette bothers me. I'm a little bothered by the Firestorm vignette. Three reasons. One half of Firestorm's a douche. Second, the other half of Firestorm's a douche. Third, the scientist that's been trying to create teleportation as, you know, Ronnie and Raymond have been taking a break from each other, finally gets close by transporting a mannequin. He's ready to really go full scale with organic material, and it's incumbent upon a college student to tell him that he's a fucking moron. Yeah, you watch the fly, you'll quickly see that it's, there's a difference in cellular makeup and stuff, inanimate and, you know, real things. Also, this guy's a villain is a little too mwahaha, hands-wringy. Also, he's irrational in his belief of science and its use across humanity, the ethical purposes behind it, almost to the point of so ridiculous he wouldn't have been undercover this long. He's that much of an asshole, especially in a major lab with all the best and brightest of the world. So, silly. All right, my tics are getting louder and louder and more frequent. I don't know what the fuck I just said about Future's End. I'm in such a late fugue state trying to put this together. I hope you enjoyed just like an ounce of this. And again, because I'm sleep deprived, your homework question is, you could rewrite any one of your favorite DC characters on an alternate Earth. Who is that DC character and what alternate Earth and what the shit do they do on it? Thank you all for listening. So sorry I'm sleepy pants. I hope you got at least, again, just a fraction of enjoyment out of this. Love you guys. Night.